Hello. It's nice to meet you all. It's nice to see so many people here. And some men. Thank you for coming too. I expected this to be a very largely female audience, but it's really nice to see you all. First of all, I'll say, in case you're going to try and take copious notes, the rough draft of what I'm about to say is going to go on my website later this week. You can pick up a business card at the end, and then you'll be able to link through to that. But when you do get to it, bear in mind two things. I am a dyslexic, so it isn't going to be wonderful English prose. My English teacher would be appalled at it. But it will give you websites, links, and the rough gist so that you can go and do more research along the way. Second thing I want to say is what this talk isn't. Okay, this talk is not a discussion on the rights and wrongs of gay marriage or second marriages and all the pitfalls and intricacies that they entail. And it's not a discussion about whether you should be a virgin when you get married or anything like that. When I talk about marriage this morning, I'm talking about a concept of two people who are in love, who want to spend the rest of their lives together. And want to do that by having some sort of ceremony to show the rest of the world this is how they feel about them, each other, and this is what they want to do. And they want to do this for the rest of their lives, okay? So that's when I talk about marriage, that's what I'm talking about, okay? I don't care whether it's a marriage under the legals of the 1994 Marriage Act or whether it's a civil partnership under that legislation or anything like that. I'm talking about what's going on in here when people stand up and get married and say, I want to be with this person, okay? So that's what it isn't, okay? Now, as you said, my name is Joanne Mackin. I was born and brought up in Birmingham, within smelling distance of the BL car plant. It's no longer there. It's a massive, great big building site now. They don't make cars there anymore, which is a great sadness to me in some respects because that was my childhood. They're building a technical college on the site, and it's going to have a new life. When I was 18, I went off to college in Bristol, where I met my husband, and I did a degree, and I ended up in computer training and support. Now look where I am. Okay, in the early 90s, with work, we moved to London, and I did a spot of commuting into central London. Everybody says you ought to do it for a few years of your life. I did three, and that was plenty for me. Then I went on to have three lovely daughters. Two of them are here this morning. One of them has just done her GCSE. She's not here. She passed, thank goodness, and is going on to do A-levels. So we're very pleased about that. The youngest one's about to go to high school. She has Asperger's syndrome, which is on the autism spectrum, which is quite entertaining at times, and she's gorgeous. And the middle one is going to model for you, and she's just wonderful. So, okay. So Holy Joes is my business. I make wedding dresses and do alterations and things like that. It comes from my love of sewing. When I was a kid, if I got bored in the summer holidays, I'd go into Mum's sewing box and I'd start making doll's clothes. When it came to do my exams, my needlework teacher said I couldn't do an O-level, as it was in those days. I wasn't good enough. So she put me in for the GCSE. When I got my results and I saw her walking down the corridor, she hid from me because I got the best marks in the school. And that sort of, as I said, I've recently discovered I'm dyslexic and that's probably why she didn't think I'd do very well, but there you go. I made my first bridesmaid dress when I was 18 for my sister's wedding and I've been doing things like that ever since. The business started when the kids went into school and I wanted something to do. It's part-time. I don't expect it to take over my life, but I enjoy doing it. All right. I'm not planning to give you a sort of an absolute, this is how you do it, okay? I'm just planning to give you some ideas, okay? Some starting points for you to go along and do your own research, okay? So, the average British wedding, wait for it, costs somewhere in the region at £18,500. Okay, it seems like a phenomenal amount of money for one day and a holiday, because that's what you're paying for. It doesn't even include that £18,500, the engagement ring. That's another £1,500 approximately on top. Okay. That my wedding, 24 odd years ago, cost me 750 quid. and it was quite a reasonably cheap wedding at the time, okay? But, and so I find that figure quite astounding, okay? When you do the maths, bearing in mind that in 2009, those were the year I could find the latest figures for, there were 232,443 marriages in the UK, okay? And if you do the maths, that's £4.3 billion in 2009, approximately, that was spent on weddings. The Olympics, according to The Guardian, cost £11 billion. Okay? And the total cost of policing and security by the Home Office each year in 2009 is also £11 billion. So a sort of 2.5 years of weddings would pay for those. And that, I thought, put it in a bit of perspective. Okay. Just to also add a little bit of perspective, in 2009, there were 113,949 divorces. That's about 10.5 people per 1,000 married. Okay, so I'm hoping that's giving us a picture of where marriage is in this country. Okay, I've got a few bits of anecdotal evidence here of things. As time has gone by, I've noticed from the weddings I've been to, there seems to be some sort of inverse proportion between the amount spent on the wedding and the longevity of that marriage. Mm-hmm. One friend of the family we know spent something like £25,000 on the wedding. They'd been separated within 6 weeks. I was gutted. I thought that was horrible. And friends that we know that have been married on a shoestring, still together 20-odd years later. Mm-hmm. My favourite weddings are the shoestring ones. They're the ones where people use the talents of their families and friends to do quite a lot of the stuff. And we're going to talk about the sort of bits that you can do that with and the sort of pitfalls that you can get into as we go along. Okay. Weddings, I'd also like to say, about community. When the community of the person getting married is involved, that's also a great sign for that wedding, that marriage, because it means those people are behind them. They're going to support them. They're going to love them. If it's done in an isolated way, and I find that those weddings, again, are the ones with the flags going up to say, I'm not sure how long this one's going to make it, because they haven't got that backing behind them. So a few thoughts about weddings in general then. So what makes a wedding ethical? Okay, there are probably as many answers to that as there are people in this room. Okay, when I get a young woman often, or various other people, not so young perhaps, come to me and say, will you make me an ethical wedding dress? My first question I ask them is, what do you mean? What do you consider ethical to be? Okay, the dresses we've come out of the other end of that process, some have been made from organic silk. Some have been made from polyester voile curtains. Some have been made from recycled charity shop satin. That's a bit of a tongue twister. And some have been made from fair trade cotton. And in the eyes of their owners, they were ethical. They had their reasons why that was their choice. Okay. Now, I did a bit of research. I discovered that philosophers consider there are three types of ethics. Now, okay, utilitarian or consequentialism, okay, that's the first type. That's where they're saying it's the end result that matters, okay? They use this sort of ethics to justify the H-bombs at the end of the Second World War. They said, I know it will kill a lot of people, but in the end it will shorten the war by a huge amount and saving even more lives, okay? This may also be your reasoning to say to the mother-in-law, no, I'm not having an £18,500 wedding, thank you very much. It's a waste, even if it's going to upset her, because the savings you do for the planet are worth upsetting the mother-in-law for. Okay. Deontology-based ethics, okay? That's based on rules, okay? So you have guidance rules. Halal meat is a deontology type version of ethics, okay? And perhaps if you're considering a vegetarian or a vegan wedding, then the rules of vegetarianism and veganism will then alter your ethics as well, okay? And then the last one is virtue, and that's all about the moral character of the agent making the decision and whether that is where the basis of your decision goes. And to be perfectly honest, as far as I can work out, it doesn't matter what the end result is. It's what's inside the person making the decision that matters when they talk about those sort of ethics. So I've talked enough for now. So what are the sort of things that you consider to be ethical when you're starting to think about a wedding or generally? Has anybody like to offer me? That's my daughter.
A great big white dress.
That's ethical, is it? Anybody else like to suggest something, or shall I give you some from my list? Yeah? Yeah, low cost, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Using sustainable products.
Sustainable products, yeah. Okay.
Carbon footprint,
indeed. Yeah. I've got down sustainability, okay. Human rights, okay. Fair trade, organic, natural, ecological, local, food and product miles, pollution, reuse, recycle, preservation, avoidance, animal rights, veganism, vegetarianism, charity, natural resources, profits or the lack of them, carbon footprints, reducing use, in season, particularly with food, justice and community. I mean, if you've got any more, by all means, shout them out. But that's the sort of words that start coming to my mind as I start thinking about ethical weddings. Mm-hmm. So if you're planning an ethical wedding or an ethical event of any type, the first thing to do is to examine yourself and see what's important to you in that concept. Because I've come to the conclusion, you cannot at this stage in the world do it all. You cannot eliminate everything that could possibly be unethical. I mean, I visited one of the stands yesterday. I've come from London, and she worked out my carbon footprint for driving here. She didn't even add the fact that I've towed a caravan, which probably balled it up. But it was 42 kilograms of carbon that we'd used to get here. She told me that the offsetting cost for that was 42p. I work out one kilogram, 1 pence, okay? And that's just to get to Greenbelt, okay? And we wanted to come to Greenbelt. Nobody would probably tell us we shouldn't come to Greenbelt, but we've developed a carbon footprint by just coming, okay? So you're not going to do it all. So sit down with everybody that's important about making these decisions and work out what's your priority. If your priority is vegetarianism, for instance, then that's going to colour the decisions. That might make you choose the polyester dress over the silk dress. That might make you choose this particular place to host your venue because of their food policies rather than somewhere else. Mm-hmm. When my husband Neil and I got married, we questioned everything. We drove our parents mad. We examined the origins of wedding cake. We wrote our own vows. The other thing I did, now bear in mind this was the 1980s, and it was still considered by the church I went to and my family that what you did was you were a virgin when you got married. Okay, and to signify this, you wore a white wedding dress down the aisle. Okay, but I decided in a fit of, it's so wasteful, I can't see myself in a white wedding dress, that I wasn't going to do that. And my poor old mum threw up her hands in horror and said, what will Auntie Flo say? And I told her I didn't care. In hindsight, I wish I hadn't done that quite like that. I wish I'd been more gentle with her. I did go down the aisle in a nice Laura Ashley blue and white floral thing, and I was very pleased with it. And she came round to my viewpoint, and Auntie Flo didn't have a fit, and we all got through the day quite happily. But these people that you're making your wedding with, your parents, your grandparents, and all your friends around you, you need to think about them. They are part of your support network. Don't alienate them. Get them on board with what you're doing. Okay, it took us a while to get back into a better relationship with the parents after our somewhat unusual wedding back in the 1980s. And if I did it again, I'd do it slightly differently and a bit more gently. Mm-hmm. My oldest daughter also said, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Later we'll talk about flowers, and plant pots come up a lot in that. And she said, you'd look awfully silly walking down the aisle with a plant pot in your hands. And she's right. So it's a celebration. So don't throw everything out, because you still want it to be a celebration of a very important day in the life of somebody. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get on to some specifics now. I'm doing them roughly in the order you might encounter them as you prepare for a wedding. And at the end, if you've got some questions, I'll be happy to try and answer them. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to look at is jewellery, because you usually start by buying an engagement ring. I don't always, but usually. And some of you will probably have seen on the news, I only caught the tail end of it because we've been away, that there's been some deaths in, the place has gone out of my brain, at a diamond or a platinum factory, that was it. I only caught the last little bit of it because we got back from holiday. And all about working conditions and wages and things like that. And the precious metals and precious stones industry around the world, a lot of it is in absolute appalling state. Okay, there's a lot of conflict diamonds, money laundering, toxic chemicals are used to process all these things, displacement of people off the land, death from the contamination of the chemicals, destruction of the wildlife, child labour. All of them pop up in the precious metals and precious stones industry. Okay. For instance, I never knew this, to get 1 ounce of gold creates 30 tonnes of waste products. Okay. That's probably only about a dozen wedding bands at the most. Okay. And you've created 30 tonnes of waste. Okay, so what are the options? What are people doing to smarten up the jewellery trade? First of all, there's something called the Kimberley Process Certification System, which goes back to the early 2000s, where countries around the world got together to try and bring together some standards to get rid of some of the money laundering and the conflict diamonds, as they're called. Okay, about 70-odd countries are now signed up for this, and it really helps. Most of the diamonds now coming onto the market have a Kimberley system, and you can check with your jeweller when you buy that your diamonds have come through that route. Canada has the best reputation for diamond mining. Okay, I didn't even know Canada had diamonds. There you go. And Australia has the best reputation for rubies and sapphires. Okay. So what can you do? Recycle. You've all seen the adverts on the television, come and sell us your gold and we'll give you some money for it. Why not recycle some gold you've already got? You could have grandma's engagement ring resized, reshaped, reset. Find a local craftsman. Get your Google and your research engines out and find a local craftsman that will do that for you. You could go and buy some second-hand jewellery. There's a few. You save a lot by doing that. You're not getting those initial costs through, and it actually saves you quite a bit of money. And again, you can have it resized, reshaped, and restyled to your fit. You can use man-made stones as opposed to naturally occurring stones like cubic zirconia or something called mozzanite. Okay. They're both diamond substitutes. And an interesting one I found while researching around the place was a wooden wedding ring. So that sounded quite interesting. I didn't get very far on that. I didn't have the time, unfortunately. So there's a few ideas of getting out there and doing something about that jewellery trade and cleaning it up a little. Now, the location you choose for your wedding will have a huge effect on your carbon footprint and the cost and the whole thing overall effect of the ethnicalness of your day. Okay. If you have an hankering for a remote Scottish castle and all of your guests live in Bristol, or you have a hankering for the Caribbean and you're all based in the UK, you're going to knock up some carbon footprint, okay? Traditionally, you got the girl got married, had the church that was just down the road, the reception round the corner. The guy lived round the corner as well, so all the family were within a few hundred yards, probably, if not a couple of miles of where you were. And it was, everybody could walk there pretty much, and it was all nice and green. This isn't the case anymore. 25 years ago, and I think it's got worse since then, I'd grown up in Birmingham. I got married and lived in Bristol. I married a boy from Lancashire, so there were family in Lancashire, and he had family in Newcastle upon Tyne as well. So there was a lot of people to move about. Okay. But it does make sense to host your wedding in the place where most people are going to be and where the organisers are. Because if you're having to traipse backwards and forwards up the country to organise the thing, that's not going to help either. Given we're at Greenbelt, it's a Christian festival, I imagine a lot of you will be choosing to get married in a religious ceremony of some sort. Not necessarily, there's nothing wrong with doing it another way. And you'll probably be drawn to your local place of worship where you go usually, or you'll be drawn to perhaps the place you went to as a child. Okay, and there's nothing wrong with that. These days you can get married in all sorts of places and you need to examine them quite well. Again, in 2009, 48% of weddings took place at licensed premises, 31.5% in Christian places of worship, 19% in registry office, and 1.5% in other places, so Jewish and Islamic weddings. Okay, so these licensed premises are big business, okay? And you need to also consider the relative positions of both place for the ceremony and place for the reception afterwards. I've heard of some people where they've been a little bit of a distance apart and they've used a full park and ride system where they've all parked at the reception and they've used a bus to take them to the church and back again. And that can work quite well if you've got something like that going on. But do think about those distances. Also think, if you're using a licensed premises and for your reception as well, about the business ethics of the company you're dealing with. If it's a big chain, you need to examine the parent company as well, so that you know what you're letting yourself in for. Talk also very early on about the catering options. If you want your wedding to be green, and we'll come back to this in a little bit later, you're going to want to be thinking about recycling of the rubbish, you're going to want to think about composting, you're going to want to think about where the food comes from. And you need to get that catering system on board, so you need to have to be able to bring in your own or make sure that they're going to be able to do more what you want and not just what they normally do. Don't forget the gardens, okay? If you were picking a location because of its garden, you might want to ask them, well, are you organically gardening? Do you compost? What sprays do you put on things as well? And use that as part of your decision-making process. The British weather is unpredictable when it comes to outside things as well. My oldest daughter went to Whipsnade Tree Cathedral. Has anybody been there? It's a fantastic place. It's a big wooded area, but they've laid it out in a traditional cathedral fashion. So you've got a nave and you've got chancels and all this. And it's absolutely fantastic. It's got a beautiful atmosphere. And she'd like to get married there, apparently. But it's all open air. So you do have to think about the wedding and where it's going to be and what the weather might throw at you. So you're not likely to be able to tick all the ethical boxes with your location. Our society doesn't really allow that for that with the places that we all now live. But see what you can do. Moving on, stationery and communications. Look to the list of things that printers will print for you for your wedding. You ready for this? Invitations to the ceremony, to the reception, to the evening, Acceptance cards, bridal note paper, coasters, favour wraps, favour boxes, order of the day cards, order of service cards, menu cards, napkins, notepads, place cards, regret cards, save the day cards, table name cards, table plans, thank you cards. Now add to that your wedding list, maps to show people where to go, lists of hotels, lists of taxi companies, train times, and the envelopes and the stamps, and you've got rather a lot of paper. Okay. In a nutshell, the way forward to be much better with this one is to go online. There's a growing number of companies that will offer to make you a wedding website, or you may even have the skills yourself to put one together. You can put a huge quantity of that paper on the website, and 90-odd percent of your guests will be able to access that information quite easily, either themselves or through a relative or a close friend. And then you can use email as much as possible. Now, I know my great aunt Ella won't cope with that, and you might have to do a few paper ones for those sort of people. She's 92, she's set in her ways, and if I told her she needed to go anywhere near a computer, she'd probably have a little fit. But you can get away from a lot of the paper. If you do need to print something, or you desperately want to print something, then look at what you're using. Recycled card, non-wood-based paper. And look at what the printing ink is being used, particularly with a big printer. Those classic printing inks are horrible. There's a lot of chemicals, a lot of stuff that's not very nice. You can find green printing companies that use vegetable-based inks, and that's a much better route. Or why not get a little working party together and make them yourselves out of recycled materials? Lots of ideas online. Have a great fun evening or two with a group of friends. Work out what you're doing. Get a basic one put together so everybody knows where you're heading. And you can make those that you need together. And as for things like name cards and things like that, if you've got somebody with a steady hand, that's all you need. Somebody to write them out nice and neatly for you. And that'll be ample. Right, my favourite bit now. We've got onto the clothes. This is where I get excited because this is what I do. Okay. The bride's dress is traditionally one of the most expensive outfits she will ever buy. Okay. Dad goes weak at the knees at the cost of the thing often. The bride's mother gets all excited and her breath swells to immense proportions while the bride flutters and frets about it for months on end. I make the things for a living. That's what I do. Yet I still have that niggling feeling. It's usually only for about 12 hours that this dress will be worn for absolute maximum. I wonder, does it make sense? And I make the things, so, and I enjoy making them, but I'm not sure it always makes sense. Okay. But you can make them greener than your worst fears suggest. I do know a woman who went down the aisle in a £10 dress from a charity shop, and lovely she looked. And it doesn't need to be a dress that will feed a generation of people in a third world country. There is a middle ground. There is things you can do to have a really nice outfit without it costing the earth in both monetary terms and ecological terms. Mm-hmm. Just a side note before I forget it, dry cleaning. Horrible chemicals. Do your research. There will be some dry cleaning involved in a wedding, almost certainly. Find yourself a much better dry cleaning company that uses nicer chemicals, recycles, cleans the air before it goes outside, that sort of thing. So that when you do need to do dry cleaning, it's much better. By all means, when you're buying that dress, go to a bridal dress shop and try some on. Suggest leaving your wallet at home. But get a feel for the sort of thing that's out there, the sort of thing you might like to wear. Okay. You could find a local dressmaker, like me. Okay, use unbleached natural fabrics that haven't ruined the environment to make. You could use organic fair trade cottons, vegetarian silks, bamboo, hemp, There's some lovely fabrics. I've got some samples over here if you want to come and look at them later, and you can see some of the things I'm on about. Unfortunately, Britain doesn't have much of a fabric producing base anymore. It's very hard to find fabric that's actually made in this country. But you can get some really nice fabrics that have been made abroad, that have been made in really good ways. Don't be afraid of using polyester. It's much better to have a dress made in this country by a local dressmaker than having one that's been shipped several thousand miles from Singapore or something like that, where the person who made it's only been paid a dollar a day and paying somebody here a decent wage to make something out of polyester. All right. Also know what you're taking on with silk. Silk comes from the silk moth, okay? He spins his nice little cocoon around himself at that point when he turns from the grub into the moth. And in order to get the best quality silk out of that moth's cocoon, which is where it comes from, you have to gas the silkworm, okay? And then you can unravel the cocoon in one long, 1.5 kilometre long bit and make your silk fabric from it. There's some concept called peace silk, and basically they've let the moth do its thing. They've let it chew its way out of its cocoon. That shortens the pieces of fibre down to about 5 centimetres or so, and then they spin them like you would wool or something like that to make a silk instead. It's still a beautiful fabric. Okay, you don't necessarily have to kill the moth to get nice silk. Okay, you might want to consider using a friend to make your dress. Lovely. If they've got the skills, go for it, if they're willing, okay? But leave yourself plenty of time. Fitting wedding dresses, if you want something really nice and fitted, takes time and takes some skill, okay? Other options, how about a family heirloom lurking somewhere? Grandmother's dress, mother's dress. I recently saw a blog post. I'm interested in Victorian reenactment clothes as well. And somebody had used a Victorian family heirloom of a dress. It was its 6th or 7th outing as a wedding dress. She had it professionally restored and fitted to herself, and she wore it down the aisle, and she looked fantastic. Alternatively, you could borrow one from a friend, mother, sister. You could have it restyled if they're in agreement, or just use the fabric from it to make something new. You could get one from a charity shop. Oxfam have set up a little chain of bridal shops. I haven't bothered to find the list of them because I think they're changing quite rapidly, but on their website you can find the list of the bridal shops. They get their dresses from brides who have handed them in, and also from the big bridal companies who give them leftover stock and samples and things like that. Some of them have never been worn, and they're considerably cheaper. Mm-hmm. There's also a number of once-worn bridal wear outlets on the web, and of course eBay. Okay, you can buy a dress that has been worn and is being sold on. There is a certain amount of buyer beware. I've seen some absolute horrors that have come off eBay, and I've seen some absolute stars of dresses that have people have managed to get at a fraction of the cost. So watch for the postage charges and be careful, but you can get some really wonderful stuff out there. You could also hire one, and you could also share one with a friend if you know somebody else, and just have different accessories or do a few little changes to it and make it have another life. If you are going to go search for a dressmaker, they're a little harder to find these days than they were. Many of them are older ladies, and they're not terribly computer savvy, all of them. So don't just rely on Google to find your dressmaker. Local fabric shops often keep lists of dressmakers, and sewing magazines will often have adverts in the back, and often they will have a list of dressmakers as well if you ring them up. Look in Yellow Pages, yell.com, and get recommendations. Before you choose a dressmaker, look at some samples, see what they've done, look at some pictures, look at some actual pieces of dressmaking that they've got on the go or have done, and see whether you can get some recommendations. Okay, get a feel of whether you get on with that person, when you have a dress made, there are endless numbers of decisions to make. And you want to be able to feel that you're in tune with them so you can make those decisions together. Don't expect it to be cheap, okay? The average wedding dress takes about 40 hours to make from one end to the other, including the design, the fitting, the making, all the rest of that, okay? So, 40 hours, £10 an hour, it's going to be £400 before you've even started. And I'm not even sure £10 an hour is actually a decent wage to pay somebody who's got the skills of a dressmaker. So don't balk when they say, well, it's going to be about £800 plus your materials, okay? Because that's not an unfair price for somebody who's doing something like that. Fabric, you're going to need about 20 metres of fabric on average, linings, outside layers, that sort of thing. Depends on what you pick, it could cost anything from about 10 quid up to about 70 quid or more for the fabric. So you've got to add that on top. I've got some websites of some lovely companies that I use. I don't endorse them officially, but I do tell you that they're quite nice. There's a chap in Macunthlaith in Wales called Phil, who sells a lot of organic cottons. He gets them made himself, fair-traded organically in India, and ships them over. Lovely fabrics. I've got one of the dresses down the back that's made out of some of his fabric. Aurora Silk is in the USA, but it's the best piece silk supplier I've been able to find. You have to leave plenty of time. Beautiful fabric again. And there's the Hemp Shop, again online. And they do hemp silk mixtures and hemp fabrics. Hemp is a lovely fibre because it uses so little pesticide. Even if it's not technically organic, it uses so little pesticides in order to make a successful crop. It's a really resilient fibre. So it's a really good choice. Mm-hmm. You might not get the shiny satin that you wanted, but you can get some beautiful fabrics. One last thing. If you groaned when I suggested wearing your mother's wedding dress, after the wedding, don't pack your dress away in a box and leave it there for the next 30 years. Give it a new life. Sell it. Lend it. Donate it. Alter it so you can wear it again. Dye it. Shorten it. Use the fabric for something else. Traditionally, you cut up your wedding dress to make the christening gown for your first child. Done that a few times for people. So don't leave it to gather dust, okay? Now, you've listened to me enough. Would you like to see some dresses? Mm-hmm. I've got 3 volunteers. None of them are professional models, but they've all volunteered for me. We've got Grace and Jess and Bridget, who are going to make their way down. And then I'll tell you about the dresses. One thing I notice, young people these days don't wear dresses like this very often, and sometimes it makes them feel a little uncomfortable, but you get used to it. So this is Grace on this end. She is wearing a recycled number. The original, it was made out of 3 different dresses. The beaded section in the middle was one dress, and the lace comes from a second dress, and the net and down the bottom comes from a third dress. And we've just taken them apart and put them back together in something that's a little bit more different and a little bit more modern than the original styles that the dress came in. Would you like to give us a twirl, Grace? Got a little train on the back. And although it isn't one of those bustier-type things that you always see, I think it's very stylish and different. Okay. Sorry? Oh, right. Right. In the middle, we have Jess. This is my daughter. Okay. She's wearing her older sister's prom dress. Okay. It is entirely made out of polyester. I offer no apologies for that. But it was made in this country by me. And therefore, it doesn't have any excessive miles of transport. And it certainly was an awful lot cheaper than buying it elsewhere. But then if we paid for my labour, it wouldn't have been, I suppose. But okay. Would you like to step forward and give us a sense? We've got a corset, a classic Victorian-style corset. It's been made a little bit higher at the front so that it's not indecent. and a nice skirt which has got godettes in it. I'm never sure whether I pronounce that right or not, so that if she gives us a really good twirl, it'll swing out. Can you manage that? Hey. Don't fall over. She's having to wear rather high heels because her sister is taller than she is. And on the end, we've got Bridget, who's wearing an organic and viscose, organic silk and viscose velvet dress. Okay, and if she'd like to step forward, you can see it's got a lovely cowl neckline and a tiny little puddle train. Okay, it's lined with organic cotton. It's a great way if you want something that you're not quite so certain about on the outside because it's pretty. Line it with organic cotton, and then you've taken a fair traded cotton, and then you've taken another step in the right direction without having to compromise some of the other views that maybe you have on the aesthetics of it. So thank you, girls. They're going to keep them on, so if you want to go and have a closer look at the end, you can. Right. Would you like? We better rattle on because we're getting behind. I don't know what time the next person starts, but I think I might overrun. Okay, veils and headpieces. Okay, borrow. Okay, they're easy to borrow. Lots of people have them. They rarely get rid of them. And they usually go quite well. Okay, shoes. One of the things I hate is these women who come to me and say, could you tell me dress up, please? And they come with, they've got these whopping great big heels up like this. And they can hardly walk in the things, and they're brand spanking new, and the wedding's next week, and you think, oh, goodness me, they're going to have blisters by the end of the first hour. Okay. New shoes for weddings, just a no-no. Okay. Old shoes that you've worn around a lot, okay, that just go. Or at least buy them a while in advance and actually wear them around the house before you start. There's some lovely vegan and fair-traded shoes coming along that you can get. Second-hand shoes from the charity shops. These people who buy these whopping great big things and anything else for that matter, they don't wear them afterwards because they don't go with anything else. You can pick them up from charity shops. Okay. I had one friend who lined up a pair of white trainers to change into later as well. Lingerie. Plenty out there. Go on Google and find it. Bridesmaids. Use all the things I've said about the bridal dress and then add washable and wearable again, okay? I think often on an ethical point, the best bet is to go and buy normal nice dresses and dress them up a bit so that afterwards they can take the dressy up bits off and wear them again. It's not nice when they wear them and they think they're hideous. And they'll never wear them to anything else because they don't go to anything else that needs a dress like that. So bear that in mind. The men. Yes, you are going to get a mention. Unless you wear a suit on a regular basis to work or something like that, buying a suit just for your wedding, I reckon, may be a waste of your time. Lots of, again, the fabrics being made, etc., etc., not a good ethical thing if all you're going to do is wear it for the one day again. Hire, okay? They get wearing it worn again, and that's a better option. Okay, you don't have to hire top hat and tails. You don't have to hire a kilt. You can hire a really relatively normal-looking suit, okay? If you do buy, try and look for natural fibres, fair-traded, etc. Cosmetics. I'm not going to say much, except might be a good option to try and change to more ethical cosmetics at this point, but don't do it just before the wedding. Do it a few months in advance, get used to them, but use this time just to prompt you to make the change. Gifts. In the olden days, when people left home to get married, they needed things to set up home, and that's where the gift lists come from. They needed everything from a pastry brush to a bed in order to set up their new home. Most people these days don't get married in a situation like that. They don't just leave home and get married. They've gone off and they've lived by themselves with a partner, in college, all sorts of places before they get married. So they don't need all that stuff, okay? However, your guests will probably want to give you a gift. So now's your time to direct them in a green fashion. Okay. There's lots of places out there where you can create gift lists online. There's even companies that specialise in green gift lists online. Okay. But not everybody is online, so give some Auntie Flo somewhere to go and get something, because she'll probably want to go out and get it for you rather than ordering it online. You can consider other things. Money. I suggest you be specific. You say we're saving up for a three-piece suite. Of course, it's going to be an ethical one made by a local craftsman or one of the fair trade ones that's on show in the Angel's Lounge or something like that. But be specific when you thank them. This went towards, and tell them what you're going to put it towards. Ask for a goat. Most of you have probably heard of Oxfam and various other charities. You can buy a goat. You don't actually get the goat, but it goes to somewhere that needs something to get you. Spades and all sorts you can get through that. And maybe that's something you might want to consider. Okay. You might want to ask for experiences instead. Go hot air ballooning, something like that. And in this day and age of consumeristic gluttony, consider what you really need. Try not to fill your home with stuff. We've been in the same house for 13, 14 years now, and it's getting a bit cluttered with five of us now, and we need to have a bit of a declutter. But I'm trying desperately hard to reduce the amount of stuff that comes into my house. Maybe you just want to ask people, if you really want to give me a gift, give it to my favourite charity and tell them what that is. At the moment, I might pick HACCS, that's a local autistic charity to us, or Macmillan, or the British Heart Foundation, whatever your local thing is that's close to your heart. Okay. You'll probably want to thank a few people as well. Use those same principles when you give a gift to somebody to say thank you. But if anybody saw that episode of Outnumbered, don't give the six-year-old a goat. She won't appreciate it. Flowers. Freight miles, pesticides, deforestation, pathetic working conditions, health problems for the workers. The international flower industry is in a bit of a state. Unlike the food, they are not very well regulated. And in many parts of the world, food gets the second place to the flowers. So when you're thinking flowers, think local, in season, grown organically, hopefully. Okay. You might have a talented friend that can grow you some. That might work if they've got plenty of space. Beware of British summers that do strange things and they might not be ready at the right time. Have a backup plan. Check the flowers that you're growing that they'll actually last the day out. You don't want them wilting before you even get to the reception. There are a growing number of florists out there that will do this sort of thing for you. They will source you local flowers, organic flowers and things like that. They're a growing thing. You might have to search for them. Don't use wild flowers. Consider cutting down on the amount of flowers you need. Do you need all those arrangements? Could you, if you're using a popular wedding venue, double up? And so you don't have to have as many flowers, so two or three weddings that are happening within two or three days of each other may be able to share the flowers if your venue is willing to put you in contact with each other. Take the flowers from the venue for the ceremony to the venue for the reception and make them work twice as hard. Use them as those thank you gifts at the end of the day. Get rid of buttonholes. Have nice hankies instead. Have a single flower instead of a big bouquet. For bridesmaids, why not have a fan or a nice little bag instead? You could consider dried flowers, fake flowers, or even potted plants, hence the comment at the beginning from my daughter. You can hire quite impressive things, topiary, plants and all sorts to decorate your venue, and then they just go get back and get used again. Okay. Why not go further away from flowers and have a sweet bouquet as a decoration on your tables? My mother had one for her 80th birthday. It looked lovely. Lots of wrapped sweets stuck on a stick with bits of paper around them stuck into a ball. I'm making myself clear. Do you get the picture? And they used like a centrepiece on a table. And then they've got something to nibble at while the speeches are going on as well. Candles, pebbles, recycled paper, streamers, fabrics, cakes, seashells and all things like that could be used instead of flowers on tables and things like that. Balloons. I don't like them. Okay. They have a big environmental impact, balloons. They get into the wildlife system. They kill birds. I don't like that. There is a growing amount of biodegradable balloons coming out. I'm not sure how fast they biodegrade and whether that actually helps at all. A number of US states have banned mass balloon releases for this very reason. So think carefully if you want balloons. And because I can't quite think where else to put it, I've mentioned confetti as well. The conventional stuff is a bit of a no-no. It's a bit like pretty litter. A lot of places ban it, so have to consider it with your venue. Rice, perhaps. Maybe not. If it gets wet, it'll get a sticky mess, and it's not terribly good for birds. Birdseed, perhaps. It's very dusty. And it can be a bit of a vermin problem creator. If you're desperate for confetti, try thinking about flower petals or biodegradable confetti. Okay, do your research so that it actually gets cleared up. Am I going over time?
It's 25 past.
Oh, right.
Okay, so go on.
Right, okay. I'll hurry through. Sorry. For the reception, think about the food. Think about what you're doing. You don't have to have a six-course meal and a U-shaped whatever, okay? Why not think about a barbecue, a hog roast, a potluck, bring and share, an afternoon tea, brunch, canapés? Think about your power consumption. Why not do it during the day? Finish early so you don't have to use all those light bulbs. Use proper cutlery and crockery, I suggest. You can get recyclable ones, but you need to make sure they actually are recycled. And the environmental impact of washing up is actually better than most of the other ones. If you're going to cater for yourself, give the job to somebody who doesn't have anything else to do. Not your mum. Okay? She's got plenty to do. And make sure that the person who's going to do it has a backup team to help them clear up and make sure that things are composted, recycled and disposed of responsibly. Favours. I don't like them. I know they're pretty, I know they're fun, but when I went to weddings as a child, you came away with the service, your name place from where you sat and a piece of cake, and I thought that was plenty. But I'm being a bit of a stick of a mud here. So why not think about something like little herb plants, little red chilies, tree seedlings, flower seeds, seashells with sweets in, all fair trade and organic, obviously. Chocolate, energy efficient light bulbs. Oxfam, Tradecraft, all those sort of catalogues might be able to find you something fair traded that might be suitable. And for goodness sake, make sure it's something that won't be in the bin the day after. Entertainment. Think it through carefully. Discos use a huge amount of power. Okay. Amateurs can be fun, but be careful. Who's seen four weddings and a funeral? A cringeworthy couple that comes up at the end of the reception to start singing. Know what you're letting yourself in for if you're using friends and family. Why not consider a barn dance, acoustic music, classical, folk, jazz, something like that. Food. Sorry, I'm rushing on a bit now. I've been taking too long. The keys for food are local, in season, organic and fair trade. If you can tick as many of those boxes, then you'll be going a long way. You don't have to stuff the guests silly. They don't have to come out feeling so full they can't move. Okay. Consider meat. There was a talk that I didn't manage to get to last night on meat. I wish I had. Your wedding day probably isn't the day to go vegan, if that isn't your current lifestyle. But you don't have to have T-bone steaks either. Drinks are very much the same, local, in-season, organic, fair trade and sustainable. A quick note on cake. Traditional fruit cake, a sign of fertility. You saved the cake for your christening. All full of things that we don't grow in this country, really. So make sure that if you go for a fruit cake option, it's fair trade and organic. And be aware that there are loads of options. We have a cake maker in our midst. I saw her sneak in and she does some lovely stuff. But you don't have to have fruit cake. photography, cleaned up a lot with digital, okay? But the trick is here to keep it digital as much as possible, to keep it online. If you've gone for that website, get people to load up their photographs rather than printing them out and sending them to you. Uses a lot of electricity too, so be aware of that. If you're thinking of using an amateur, make sure they're prepared. A professional photographer will have spares of everything and could probably rustle you up somebody even if they're ill. If you use an amateur or even a semi-professional, make sure they've got the spares. Don't give the job to the best man or somebody like that. They've got plenty of other things to do. If you do use a friend, give them that nice, loud, mouthy friend that you've got to marshal everybody into the right place to help them along the way. Use Flickr, Facebook and things like that to share the photographs at the end. Videos have the same sort of issues. I come from a family of photographers. We used to have a BBC cameraman and an ITV film editor amongst our family. But we've still got hours and hours of bits of video that nobody's ever edited together at all. So it costs about £900 on average to do the photographs and another £900 on average to do the video. Mm-hmm. Transport. Depending on how you've got your venues and stuff together, you may not need very much. A stretch Hummer may not be the thing. But why not consider LPG or diesel-run vehicles? Hire an electric one. Get a friend to play chauffeur for the day. Why not a motorcycle and sidecar? A tandem or a rickshaw or even a horse-drawn carriage? All of those would have a better impact. Seen lovely processions in France. They walk from the church to the receptions. Great way to do it if it's close enough. If you are tempted by a horse and carriage, use something that's reputable with an experienced driver. You don't want somebody's horse that only pulls a trap once in a blue moon in case they get spooked by a child or a flash photography or something like that. Honeymoons, stag parties, hen parties. I've clumped them all together. Carbon footprint here is a big thing, use of fossil fuels, etc. My suggestion is do something local. Save that exotic, far-flung destination for some time after the wedding when you've all calmed down and recovered from the exertions of doing a wedding. And if you are going any distance, carbon offset. We'll talk about that in a moment. We went to a nice little thatched cottage in the New Forest, and it was lovely. So. Carbon offsetting. I've been putting this off because it's a tricky one. There's lots of charlatans out there that will try and sell you carbon offsetting and not actually do anything. And the government has dropped its quality assurance scheme, so it's getting even harder. I was pleasantly surprised to find somebody doing carbon offsetting in GSource, so you could go and have a look at those. And there's some things on my website of some links. Do your research. Watch out for scams. Think this one more globally because it does affect the global issues. Pick your site carefully. Pick your people carefully. Don't get distracted by free bumper stickers and certificates and things like that. Consider a charity rather than a company because then you know where the profits are going to go. So that's about it. There's been a lot of weddings over the years. I discovered that the absolute peak in this country was in 1940 at the beginning of the Second World War. I'm not too surprised by that. The last peak was in the early 1970s, where we reached 426,000 weddings in them, and it's been slowly declining ever since. Weddings are special. They need to be a celebration. They're somebody committing something for the rest of their lives. Let's make them a celebration, but let's not destroy the planet in the process. I think that's about everything I'm going to say. I hope I haven't run over somewhere. Is there time for a couple of questions?
Yes.
Yeah? Is there anybody with anything burning to ask?
Yes.
Oh, no, it's my daughter. She can wait till that's been later. if I just like to say, I've got a couple of folders here with some fabrics and some dresses if you want to look. By all means, go and see the girls. And I've got a box of business cards here if you want to get access to things. I've skipped over a few bits towards the end, so you might want to come and read it later. Mm-hmm. Okay.